Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show. It's the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City. Brian Diaz here with you. I may be a moron, friends, but I know one person I can beat in an IQ test. He has orange hair. I'm going to leave it at that. Good show coming up for you today, friends. What we're going to talk about principally is South Africa Wine Week, which we're talking about quite a bit these days. That's coming up, of course, October 30th to November 5th here in New Orleans and some of the surrounding areas. And it's going to be a fun week. A lot of people doing interesting things, kind of casual. You know, there's some dinners going on, some food pairings going on, places you can just go explore South Africa wines by the glass. One of the things that we're doing here on the show leading up to the event, and we'll do a lot of coverage during the event as well, is paying a visit to some of the venues that are participating in South Africa Wine Week. And that's what we do on the show today. We paid a visit yesterday, if you're listening to the radio show today here on Thursday. We paid a visit to Effervescence, which is a new, fairly new, open about 7 months, I believe, wine bar on North Rampart Street, the 1000 block of North Rampart Street. And they, as you might gather by the name, emphasize sparkling wines as part of their program. They do cocktails, of course, and they do still wines, and they have some couple beers, and they do small plates. But the emphasis, of course, is on sparkling wine, not just champagne, but the broader world of sparkling wine. And we talk with the proprietor there, Crystal Coco Hines, and we talk a little bit about, you know, their program, and we talk about what they're doing for South Africa Wine Week. And I think one of the cool things is we don't see a lot of sparkling wine from South Africa. And really, to be honest with you, the sparkling wine category from South Africa has really started to make great strides, much like the wine in general there has. But I think it's, you know, the sparkling wine has come along maybe a little bit later even than some of the still wines. So not a lot of really good stuff has been on the market yet here. And in fact, a good example is two of the they're bringing in three sparklings to feature by the glass and by the bottle at Effervescence. Two of the three, I believe that'll be the first time that they're actually on the market here in the New Orleans area at all. So that'll be pretty interesting. And then another one, Graham Beck, which has been on the market for a little bit, will also be featured. So we talked, you know, a little bit about that stuff, what to expect from the sparkling. So I think I wanted to highlight that because that's going to be sort of unique and an interesting way to go explore South Africa wines is taking a look at some of the sparkling stuff. And then we also pay a visit to our friends Mobar, also on North Rampart, just a couple blocks down the street or up the street, I should say, from Effervescence. And we talk with Jillian White, the beverage director there, Brad Vecchiola, the staff sommelier. And we're also joined by Jeff Warden, who is a sales rep for Purveyor of Fine Wines, a very fine distributor here in town that has a lot of South Africa stuff in the portfolio. And we do something we haven't done quite a while on the show, which I really enjoy. We basically do a live tasting for, I think, two or three segments, and Jeff pours us, I believe, six South African wines that we taste and do it on the fly and talk about what we're tasting. And so it's going to be a lot of fun. And what Mobar is going to do is they're going to feature some stuff by the glass, probably some of these selections that remains to be seen exactly what they pick. And then they're going to do some recommended pairings. And I talked to executive chef John Bell there off air, and it's not just going to be recommended stuff from the existing menu. He's going to craft a little bit for us here. So a good thing to go check out there at Mobar. So we're going to do that. That'll be a lot of fun coming up in just a little bit. First, we're going to talk with Effervescence, and then we'll visit Mobar, and then we'll be back to close out the show. Of course, friends, one of the things we're going to talk about here for the next little while, as you can imagine, are the wildfires going on in California. It's a scary situation. It's a sad situation. As of the winds kind of tapered a little bit, you probably know what's going on. There are a series of several 20-plus fires, I believe, that are actually burning through the area, generally in Northern California. Some of them are more substantial, I guess I hate to use that word, than others. But a lot of these are threatening wineries, the Napa, Sonoma, Mendocino a bit, you know, and so threatening wineries, vineyards. What I want to say to lead off the situation here is, of course, the, you know, and as most people that I'm reading any sort of interview with and a little bit of communication that I've had with friends and colleagues out in that direction, we're mostly concerned with the human toll here. Okay, wine will recover, wine will be fine, all of that sort of thing. We're talking about at least 3,500 structures, I believe, either damaged or destroyed, 23 dead as of this morning, still several hundred missing. I think that number will hopefully go down as people kind of find each other and report in. Over 170,000 acres have burned with all of these fires. And again, we're talking about thousands of displaced people and have lost everything. Santa Rosa and the Fountain Grove Grove neighborhood was particularly hard hit. And so that's really what we're talking about here. A little bit later on, we're going to talk about some places that you can give to if you're interested in helping out, which I think is an important thing. So we're going to talk, you know, here we go. We're talking about it now. Wanted to mention one of the people that actually lost their house is Carissa Cruz. She's a friend of the show, friend of mine. She is the director of the Sonoma County Wine Grape Commission and has been on the show before. And she continues to work. I was reading a whole bunch of stuff in the press that Chris, you know, being the spokesperson for the Sonoma region, for the most part, talking about what's going on there. What I should say too about a lot of these places is that we don't know what the toll is here. Okay. And I'm kind of focusing at this point now on the wine industry and what we're talking about. In Sonoma in particular, getting accurate reports, a lot of people have not been able to report in yet. So we really don't know what the toll here is going to be. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that. But all reading through all this stuff, and then I learned that Carissa actually lost her house in the Fountain Grove fire in Santa Rosa there in Sonoma, and yet continues to work. And I have a great deal of respect and my sympathy for Carissa. And hopefully we'll get her on the show after the dust settles. She's got better things to do than talk to us. But maybe in a few weeks, we'll get Carissa on the show to talk to us about what happened a little bit in some of these things. But again, we're talking about the human toll here, a little bit of what's going on. A couple things that we know about: 5 wineries in Napa and Sonoma and Mendocino, actually 16 or so wineries, I should say, have had some damage or totally destroyed. Quick rundown so far what we know: Helena View, Johnston Vineyards in Napa and the Calistoga area. I believe Calistoga, the town, which is in the northern part of the Napa Valley, is now under a mandatory evacuation, or at least much of the town. And I believe part of the town of Sonoma is as well. But Helena View, Johnston Vineyards, again in Calistoga, has been completely destroyed. Robert Sinsky Vineyards on the Silverado Trail in Napa. Some of the vegetation around the winery is apparently burned. One of the ones you've probably seen, Signorello Estate Vineyards, also 4500 Silverado Trail, kind of right in the heart of the Silverado Trail. Some of these iconic images that we've seen from the fire has completely burned down and completely destroyed. All of their employees, thankfully, are safe. And the owner, Ray Signorello, says that he will rebuild. Stagsley Winery, people were talking about that one being destroyed. Just some of the outer buildings are actually destroyed at this point. Vinrock on Atlas Peak Road, they had to evacuate late Sunday night, and the home of the proprietor and winemaker Michael Parmenter said basically his home and the winery are a complete loss. White Rock Vineyards, Loma Vista Drive in Napa, which has actually been owned by the same family since 1870. The winery is confirmed destroyed from the Soda Canyon Road fire. William Hill Estate, another one that was misreported as being destroyed, that's owned by E&J Gallo. Just the entrance sign, and that was making its rounds on social media, and it was just the sign in front that was damaged. Chateau Saint-Jean, big winery. The winery was not destroyed. There's some damage to some outer buildings, the entryway, archway, but the main structure appears to be unharmed, and there's some, you know, some damage to some of the vegetation around. Also in Sonoma, Gunlack Bunshu Winery, despite some earlier reports, also the winery buildings are all structurally sound so far. Nicholson Ranch, that the damage was not significant there in Sonoma. Paradise Ridge Winery, unfortunately, in the Santa Rosa area in Sonoma, was completely destroyed on Monday by the Tubbs fire. That was one of the first ones to basically be destroyed. Frey Vineyards, another one, they is a total loss. That's in Mendocino. And Oster Wine Cellars was also destroyed in the Redwood fire in Mendocino. So that's about where we're at with some of those things. And again, our hearts go out to these people. Our hearts go out to everyone who's been affected by the fires. One of the things that I want to say, I'm reading a lot of stuff in both the national media and some of these other sources. It's too early to say, and we're going to talk about a little bit more about this stuff after the break. It's still too early to say what the effects are definitely going to be to the wine industry, what it means to you as a consumer, and these things moving forward until we know really what the damage is. I'm also reading a lot of people talking about smoke taint, which we're going to talk about after the break and what that is. And smoke taint is not all that well understood. It's somewhat understood, but not so great. And what that means for the vintage, a lot of people are saying, well, hey, you know, the grapes that are still hanging on the vines right now, typically the late harvested ones like Cabernet Sauvignon being a good example, they've got thick skins, so that's going to act as a bit of a barrier to smoke taint. That might be true to a degree, but the longer that these grapes that are still hanging on the vines, and it's been reported that about, depending on what region we're talking about, 70 to 90% has already been picked. So if the stuff isn't damaged in the cellar, meaning the cellar itself is not damaged, then there's no effect on the wines. But in the case of the stuff, that little bit that's still out there, a lot of Cabernet Sauvignon, as I mentioned, maybe some Zinfandel, some of these things, the more contact that these grapes have with the smoke, there's going to be smoke taint in the wines. We'll talk a little bit about that after the break. But again, point is, economically, cost of bottles, all these things, it's way too early to tell friends what some of these effects might be. So I don't want to make wild speculation. Might talk a little bit about what some of the possibilities are, but that's kind of what we know right now. And we're going to take a little break here on the Nola Drink Show. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about smoke taint, some other things that can happen to the vines, and again, mention how you might be able to help. Take a little break here. Come on back.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bageau heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
All right, friends, welcome back to the show. Thanks for tuning in today. Yes, we're talking about the wildfires in California and how that's potentially affecting, to at least to a degree, what's going on with the wine business there and how this may affect the wine business moving forward. We're really not going to speculate too much on some of that. We're just talking about a few topics connected to that. And again, I want to emphasize what we're really concerned about here is the human toll. One thing, let me mention this right off the top, how you can help. There's a lot of the wine regions outside of the areas affected by the fires are rallying to help. People are helping people, offering their winemaking facilities, offering equipment, offering staffing to some degree to help out. We can't really do that from here. But if you're interested in donating money, which I always recommend in these situations, because these are good organizations that spend the money as it's needed. We've talked a lot about that with hurricane relief and some of this stuff. You can get to the Sonoma County Resilience Fund. Just look at these up on Google, because a lot of them have long URLs, but look up Sonoma County Resilience Fund, Napa Valley Community Foundation, and Community Foundation of Mendocino County. Again, Sonoma County Resilience Fund, Napa Valley Community Foundation, or the Community Foundation of Mendocino County. We will share that on our Facebook page, Nola Drinks. Check that out. Okay, friends, I want to talk a little bit about smoke taint and what that means. I'm reading a lot of stuff, okay? And I mentioned right before the break that depending on what region we're talking about, for example, Mendocino, they seem to be there. They tend to harvest maybe a little bit later, cooler climate in a lot of situations. They're about 70% done, okay? And Napa, they're claiming, and Sonoma, I believe, closer to 90% being done with harvest. The longer the grapes sit in smoke and are affected by smoke, touching smoke, okay? And the air quality, I should mention this too, the air quality in the area is very bad. Hundreds of miles away, people are being sick. All the way down in the East Bay, which is where I grew up, Oakland, Berkeley, Fremont, those parts of the world between Oakland and San Jose, it's actually raining ash. That's going on through a lot of the region. On our Facebook page this morning, we posted a satellite picture of the plumes coming from the fires drifting out over the Pacific Ocean. But you can see how the health effects can happen. And the smoke can kind of sit around the vineyard. Now, one thing I want to say is actually vineyards tend to act like natural fire breaks. There's really not a whole heck of a lot that typically burns. They're kind of wet plants, really, especially so during these times when they're not dormant. So they themselves are not a lot of fuel for fires, and especially since they're kind of cleared out. They do provide to a certain degree to be natural fire breaks. Now, one of the things that can happen before I get to smoke taint, however, is people sometimes in between the rows, which they really should do for good viticulture, leave cover crop and cover crop helps fix nitrogen in the soil and some of these things. And cover crop, it can burn. And that's what's been going on. A lot of stuff's burning. And I've also read reports that saying, hey, well, it's just the cover crop that's burning. The vines themselves aren't damaged. Well, one of the things that can actually happen is when cover crop burns, and if the fires are around the edges of a vineyard, for example, the fires can actually cause the liquid in the vascular areas, the internal arteries, if you will, or veins inside the vines can actually boil. And that can cause significant damage to the vines. It can kill the vines and seriously affect their output. You know, grapevines, unlike a lot of native vegetation, are not adapted to fire like a lot of stuff is, that grows wild would be, of course. So that's actually something that can happen, that you basically can get damage, not so much the vines burning themselves, but being exposed to heat nearby that, again, causes the vascular areas, the liquid inside, if you will, to boil inside the vine and damage the vine. So that's one thing that's actually going on. And one thing I also want to say here, friends, too, before we move on, is a lot of people also, I heard lots of reports after all the rain that California got over the winter and all that, oh, hey, the drought's over. You know, all this 5 years of panic and so on and so forth, that, hey, it's now all taken care of because of one good year. That's not true. Droughts have a much larger effect than people might think. And one of those was 5 years of piling up of dead vegetation. These fires, these winds happen quite often. They're called the Los Diablos, the Devils. It's named after Mount Diablo in the East Bay, actually pretty close to where I grew up. And these cool air blows in off the ocean and then rises up, and then we get dry air, and it's sort of almost like a big wind tunnel. Okay. And I'm not a meteorologist, but that's the short story of it. And these things cause these conflagrations to basically just blow up. So little bits of spark, any number of things can basically just get a little bit of fire going. Somebody throws a cigarette out the window. I'm actually reading that the power company might, their power lines might have some connection, at least to some of the fires going on. These hot, dry winds blow and cause the flames to blow up. And then there's a ton of fuel from 5 years of drought sitting around on the ground. Okay, so there's that. Let's talk about smoke taint, because I mentioned that. A lot of people are also throwing things around about smoke taint and what that may mean. Again, not all that well understood, but one of the things that actually happens with smoke taint is smoke taint actually, it really affects the skins more than it does the inside. So it settles in the waxy cuticles toward the outer skin of the berry. It's not in the juice or the flesh. There's no health issue with smoke taint, so don't worry about that. But that's basically how this happens. So it can really affect red wines more than white, because as people, if they're trying to, as you do with making red wine, you let the stuff sit on the skins longer, and that can actually permeate into the wines more. It actually gets worse when you're macerating the wines after you've picked them. So, and, you know, if you're trying to make good red wine, it's hard to not leave skin contact on the wine for a period of time. That can be a problem. 2008 in Mendocino, I tasted a lot of those wines, severe smoke taint. Some people say, hey, you're making big oaky wines, maybe not much of a problem. That's true. Lower levels might be non-detectable. It actually takes quite a bit to be detectable, frankly, friends, with smoke taint. But, you know, those wines, 2008 Mendocino, serve as a good example of that. It can be rather prevalent. And those, you can taste them in a lot of Mendocino and some Lake County wines as well from those fires. We are going to see some smoke taint almost certainly in these wines. Even if the Cabernet is thicker skinned, some of these vineyards are going to have a good amount of contact with smoke. So either we may not taste it in the wines, we may not get it because a lot of people may not make the wines. There are some high-tech ways to do this, reverse osmosis being one, to remove smoke taint, but I believe that might affect some of the flavor in the wines, and it's also costly. There's another procedure also that's out there that's costly to do this. Really nothing low-tech works, so a lot of filtration and fining and stuff is basically going to do nothing for you with smoke taint. But it's again, and it's not all that well understood, and you know it really is not. So again, speculation on what smoke taint may mean for the wines right now is very premature. It's going to be out there now. Whether it ends up in the bottle or not, that's a different story. A lot of reports out there going on, so they'll kind of put that to bed. We'll talk more about that as this becomes more obvious, or what's going on with the smoke taint, what the realities are, and you know who's lost vineyards and what's been damaged and so on and so forth. There will be damage. There has been damage. Okay, we're going to put it that way. Make that very clear. Talking about the economic impacts, friends, of what the fire might mean to the wine, and I don't really want to speculate because we really, really don't know. A lot of the vineyards that we're talking about and wineries in these areas are premium wines. We're not talking about some of the bulk growers or bulk vineyards, although maybe in some areas we are, for example, maybe parts of Sonoma and maybe parts of Mendocino that, you know, sell to larger brands and these sorts of things that then tend to put out wines that are in the, you know, mid price point, if you will, say between $15, $20, that kind of range. But really, we're talking about premium wines. We're talking about expensive Napa stuff. And these wines are priced as luxury goods. A lot of these wineries, and I'm not going to make sweeping generalizations here, but you know, some of these wineries are pretty well capitalized, these sorts of things. These wines are actually priced in a way, because they're premium wines, that they're not necessarily reflective of their production costs with a small markup. They're marked up quite well. So we may not see a whole large effect with the pricing of the wines overall. Certainly, as we talk about individual wineries that may have lost more than others, these things can change. But on balance, maybe not, hard to say, but I really don't think that that's going to be too much of the case, unless this gets a lot worse, which it could. I said I wasn't really going to speculate. I guess I just did. So there you go. What it might mean to the mid price point in some of these things does remain to be seen. I think that's really not our concern here. I think our concern is, again, more, I keep saying this, the human toll that goes on with a fire like this. As it affects you, the consumer, and the pocketbook, I really wouldn't at this point worry about it too much. I don't think it's really going to affect a whole lot, unless you're particularly brand and something a favorite of yours, Signorello or somebody like that, is something that you're, you know, into, maybe a wine club member or whatever. But as far as that goes, I think we're okay there, at least to this point. It's a tough situation, and we'll keep reporting on this. We'll talk more about it next week. I do want to emphasize to you, friends, about the places where you can give. I want to mention them again: Sonoma County Resilience Fund, Napa Valley Community Foundation, and Community Foundation of Mendocino County. And again, we will share that on our Facebook page. Stay tuned for more. Give if you can, and we'll keep reporting on it. It's a very fluid situation. As I mentioned, there's still a lot of news to come out. So what these effects are, both on the quality of the wines, the economy, and all of this stuff, remains to be seen. What is clear is that thousands of people have been affected by this, and at least 23 people thus far, and that number is going to go up, have been killed, and we are not out of the woods yet. Most of these fires are not contained at all, or barely contained. So we hope that there's going to be some relief with the weather. All kinds of resources are being moved from around the country to help fight these fires. I believe there's now something like 80,000 firefighters now on the scene working to do stuff, but it's still, again, very fluid. Resources are being used to evacuate people, all this kind of stuff, not necessarily 100% dedicated to fighting the fires. So friends, hey, we're going to take a little break here on the show. Keep our fingers crossed for our friends out west. When we come back, we're going to be chatting with Effervescence and then Mobar, and we'll be back to close out the show. Come on back.
Market offers daily entertainment and delicious food and drink options throughout our 6-block district. Whether you crave raw oysters or fresh produce, authentic confections or healthy daiquiris, you can find it here. Sit at one of our cafes and hear live local music. Enjoy a muffaletta, po' boy, salad, or cheese plate in the farmers market. Check out our pop-up farmers markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays for even more fresh food options. History is being made fresh daily at the French Market. Visit frenchmarket.org for food, drink, retail, and event listings.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranac's, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Hey, friends. Thanks for tuning into the show, as always, every week. And as you know, now we are here sitting at Effervescence, the 1,000 block of North Rampart. And pleased to be joined by Crystal Coco, the proprietor here. Crystal, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's Crystal Coco Hines.
Crystal Coco Hines. I'm sorry. I know you're. We were talking about this. I apologize. And no disrespect to John, your husband. I absolutely forgot about that part because we were talking about how I know your brother a little bit, John.
Kirk.
Kirk, excuse me. John's your husband. Kirk. And so I'm thinking Kirk Coco, Crystal Coco Hines. So let me straighten that out.
That's fine. A lot of people do call me Coco, so that's fine.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. So we'll give a shout out to John, and we're going to give a shout out to Kirk as well. So and then we're going to move forward on that after I gaff that whole thing. So we're here at Effervescence, which is your sparkling, well, bar and wine bar that you opened up 7 months ago, Crystal, you said.
Yes.
Go on.
We opened on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. We're super excited. We just finished our first summer, and we're getting really excited to move into fall. We have some fun things planned.
That's great. And so you opened up in March. We're talking a little bit about this, and I don't want to go too far down this road. It's a topic for other shows that we often do here, talking about the restaurant business. But interesting time, right? You open up in spring, and then you get through the summer. That teaches you a lot about being here, doesn't it? Being
in
New Orleans in the summer.
Well, I was told about it before. So actually, the stories were more scary than they actually were.
That's good.
The way it actually turned out. But you have to work a little harder in the summer because a lot of the local clientele, they're not here. They leave. And tourist season slows down, so you know, we had some special events, we had some special tastings, and people came in and they supported us, so I was super excited.
That's great. And you do need to, in the summer months, I think you know this very well, you need to cultivate the locals as well.
Yes.
Right? I mean, this is what keeps us alive in those
and
months.
The locals, that's one of the reasons I opened. I live in the neighborhood. I want to be a place that the neighborhood people can come in, get a glass of wine, get a nice glass of bubbles to go when you're walking in the park across the street or through the quarter. We have these fabulous to-go cups. They're like Go Vinos. They say Effervescence, and everybody loves them. And so you can come and pick your bubble and walk all over the French Quarter.
So that's really cool. And for friends that are listening to the show on the podcast, if you're actually not from the New Orleans area, you probably know this because you probably come to New Orleans, but we have a thing called the Go Cup here where you can take something to go and go wander around. And as you said, Crystal, y'all are more or less right across the street from Armstrong Park.
Yes, and we have lots of festivals and music always going on. We even have a market there on Thursdays with fresh food. Yeah.
Yep.
From the farmer's market. So it's super fun to be able to get a really good glass of something you like and go and use a clean bathroom and maybe come in after for some food.
Hey, so. There you go. I like that. And clean bathroom, good selling point here on North Rampart Street. So what, Crystal, tell us a little bit, what prompted you to, somebody just walked in unsolicited, I love this place. Fantastic. What prompted you to open up? And you guys do serve mixed drinks. You do have still wine, but of course, the emphasis here at Effervescence, as the name indicates, is on sparkling. What prompted you to open up a sparkling wine spot?
I think it was kind of just a natural progression. I always love bubbles and sparkling wine. My family was French and Italian, and every meal or special occasion, we popped a bottle to celebrate being together. And I have that memory of a child growing up. And I just feel like now I'm 50-something years old, and I feel like every day is special enough to pop a bottle. And
I like that reasoning. That's good reasoning right there.
It might not be champagne because you might not be able to afford it, but there's great affordable sparkling wines from all over the world. And I thought, how great would it be to have a place where I could meet my friends or my family and just celebrate the day, share some small plates, some food that goes with wine or bubbles and not be rushed, and just take a minute and slow down and celebrate where you are at this moment.
Great. I like it. And as you mentioned, too, and for listeners out there, if you listen to this show, you know this. There's champagne, of course, comes from France. Has to come from France these days, from the Champagne region. Yeah. But there is a big world of sparkling out there. So people often throw it around, I'm sure, Crystal, that you get this. It's a champagne bar. But we want to be correct. This is a sparkling wine bar.
Right.
It's a big world of sparkling wine.
And that's
wine
why
out there.
It's named Effervescence. A lot of people ask me, why did you come up with that name? And if you start reading or talking about sparkling wine, the word effervescence always comes up. That's one of the characteristics that you look for in a sparkling wine. How effervescent is it? Do the bubbles last a long time? Do they stay with you? Do they dissipate real soon? Are they big? Are they small? So it was kind of a natural name for me, effervescence, just all things sparkling, including the beer we sell and, you know, other things. We have sparkling drinks and all kinds of play with that word, effervescent.
It works great. Nice image. It's one of the things I like about the room, and of course, it's radio, so I will do my best to describe and bear with me. I mean, so it's very bright in here, which is really nice. And so, I mean, we have some, we're here, it's a Tuesday, friends, if you're listening to the show a little bit later, Wednesday, excuse me, in the early evening, so nice sunlight coming through the windows. It's a nice, bright, effervescent space. You
know? It is. No one has ever said that before, but you are right.
Oh, that had to be part of the branding, right? Well, you've given me a glass of champagne. There's one free idea for you.
Well, we mostly open in the evening, except for Sundays, which we now open from 1 to 8, but it becomes very loungy and romantic because we dim the lights, and we have candlelight here and in the courtyard in the back with a bubbling fountain. So the atmosphere does change in the evening and
that's
from
great.
The light.
It's nice. And nice. And well, let's touch on this too, because we definitely have some time. We were talking a little bit about North Rampart Street, and this is actually something that we've talked a lot about, Crystal, on the show quite often with our friends from Mobar and other establishments. It's nice to see, now that the streetcar is open.
Yes.
It's a huge thing. This is sort of, and I've heard this said before, this is not me saying this, that it's maybe the last grand boulevard in New Orleans to get this treatment. And so
yes.
We're seeing, I hate to use this word because I think it's overused, but we're seeing a revitalization of North Rampart Street. The street itself is becoming a destination.
Yeah, I believe it is too, and I'm super excited about it. And it's so well lit that you feel safe walking here at night. You know, the light helps a lot. You
right.
don't want to walk on those shady, dark streets where you can't see,
yeah.
you know, what's lurking behind a car, whatever. So it's super bright, so a lot more people are walking at night, parking out here. The police are out here more, you know, the patrols. So, yeah, we're super excited about it. Like I said, I live a block away, so I love this neighborhood. I really wanted to, you know, my place to be in this neighborhood.
That's great. Now that the construction and so the streetcar, the classic, if you're listening from out of town, they expanded the streetcar line. The classic New Orleans streetcar now runs all the way down to Elysian Fields here. And it's a great way to hop on the streetcar.
It is. I rode it today with my grandson. He was with me. He loves the streetcar. And believe it or not, this streetcar line is air conditioned. Not all of them are.
That is a key thing to know, Crystal. And I'm glad you said that, because people think, oh, streetcar, I'll come to New Orleans here in September, October, something like that, and ride the streetcar. Beware of what line of streetcar you get on. The new ones are the new ones.
It was a really nice ride.
Yeah, yes. I bet. And that's, so there you go, friends. You can take an air conditioning streetcar down North Rampart Street and end up here at Effervescence. Tell us a little bit, Crystal, you poured us something special that I'm enjoying greatly. Tell us a little bit about this sparkling Apollyon.
This is a champagne, and it's one of my favorites. That's why I poured it. It's called Sylvie Pauliac Delalot Explosion Extra Brut. And like I was telling you, this was a Christmas gift to some of my close friends last year. I just love the full body that it has. It's a combination of all three of the traditional grapes from Champagne, the Chardonnay, the Pinot Noir, and the Pinot Meunier, predominantly the Pinot Meunier in this and this.
You get the nice fruity note and the flinty note from the coming through really nicely. And it has a really nice yeast note, but there's a nice white stone fruit note that comes through really clearly on this. It's really enjoyable. It's actually
bold. I'm so glad you like it.
I love it. Actually, it's great. I like you. Like you said, I've actually never tasted this before. I'm finding it bold but restrained, if that's a way to put it.
Yes, it's very drinkable. It's a crowd pleaser too for champagne. Most people enjoy this. It's really nice, and like I said, it's something that you don't find everywhere. So I thought it would be fun for you to try it.
I really appreciate that, and like I said to you during the break, you said you gave this away for Christmas. I want to be on a Christmas. So,
the other interesting note about this, I think I pointed out, was Sylvie is made by a woman winemaker. And we have this on our Femme Fatale flight.
Yeah.
We specialize in flights. And these are they're tastings of three wines around a theme. And you can get a full glass or a half glass of any of them.
Oh, here's what I want to do, Crystal, because I hadn't forgotten about that. And those are two things that I definitely want to touch on. So we're going to take a little commercial break.
Okay.
And then we're going to come back. We're going to talk about the flights. And I definitely want to talk about the Femme Fatale flight because I think it's a really cool concept.
Awesome.
And then, of course, one of the things that we're going to talk about here, friends, on the show is how you can come during South Africa Wine Week and check out what they got going on. You can get some bubbly from South Africa. Yeah, they're doing that here at Effervescence. We're going to take a little break on the Noel Drink Show, friends. Come on back.
100 years, my family's done it this way.
Hey ladies, are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in the Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time, the full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 after 5 happy hour special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Mighty cootie fire on a mighty broad day.
Welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Yep, we are here on North Rampart Street chatting with Crystal Coco from Effervescence, the relatively new, we'll say, sparkling focused wine bar here on in town at the edge of the French Quarter. And well, let's talk about this, Crystal, because we were talking about this right before we went to the break, sipping on this very nice Polyak. You guys emphasize flights here, and the winemaker behind this wine is a woman, and one of the flights that you have is called Femme Fatale, emphasizing female winemakers, which I think is very cool.
Yes, I was super excited to get this flight on board because in the world of champagne, women have played such a vital role, especially in France in the very beginning. Women were not allowed to really work. And it was only because of becoming a widow, like Veuve Clicquot or Lily Bollinger, that they were able to work with the cellar masters and actually help run the champagne house. And so I thought it was really important to focus on that because their input has changed the champagne forever. Like Veuve Clicquot made the riddling rack from her kitchen table, and just some really interesting facts that women have brought to the winemaking world, the champagne world.
It's the champagne world, and the winemaking world in general. And I think it's an important something we talk about on the show a lot of our gender issues in the service industry, hospitality industry, winemaking industry, and it's an important story to tell. Because sometimes it's an unsung story to tell, like you were talking about, because of the way history wants to whitewash or mail wash. We'll say that. I made that term up. We're going to mail wash stuff. But that's not a sociological accepted term, but I made it up anyway. So it's really cool. So you're doing that flight, the Femme Fatale flight.
Yes.
Much of the emphasis also of what you all do here are on flights as well, which allow people to explore certain sparkling wines and get the story behind them, like we're talking about with the Femme Fatale flight.
Right. We really try to educate our staff so that they can share just a little bit of each sparkling wine or champagne with the client, so they at least remember one fact or one interesting story about each one. We try to focus on different countries, or our Globetrotter is around the world. You know, we have the Italian flight, the French, the Spanish, The British are coming. That's a super exciting area.
Yeah, absolutely.
For bubbles right now, as they call them, British fizz. So that's a lot of people have never even tasted any sparkling wine from Britain. So.
And you can hear it with that accent, right? Calling it the British fizz. You can just hear it.
I don't know. I'm pretty Southern.
I'm picturing my inner Monty Python right now. But anyway, okay, yeah.
Then something else we have really interesting is we have a vertical flight for those champagne lovers who really can taste the distinct differences from year to year. Mm-hmm. So right now we're doing Perrier Jouet. We're doing 2006, 7, and 8. So you can taste a half glass or a glass from each of those vintages.
And that's really unique, right? Because an opportunity to taste a champagne or sparkling that way when often they're non-vintage. So when you actually get a vintage champagne.
Yes.
I don't want to say that's unique per se, but that's not as common as some things. And then being able to taste a vertical flight to be able to compare vintage to vintage, that's a really interesting thing.
Yeah, I thought it would be. So I was excited about that.
And Jouer is a great choice for that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. People know it and they do it.
And we do have a perlage system that we put those expensive bottles under.
Okay.
So that they stay fresh. And
Tell people what that means, because that's important.
Perlage, it's a special canister that you put the bottle in, and then we put CO2 into it and seal it.
Yep.
So it sits on top and doesn't allow the air to oxidize the wine and change it. And I have tasted it every 2 weeks, and it's been delicious since we've opened. And so it's just like you just opened the bottle.
And I appreciate the tough job, Crystal, that you have tasting that every 2 weeks to ensure quality. QC is part of the owner's job, right?
Yeah, well, I always tell the staff, because right now we have Krug by the glass, and I'm really working hard to get my very favorite Salon by the glass in the fall. And I tell them, well, if it doesn't sell, we have the Perlage. And then if that doesn't work, I'll just bring it to my house. It's only one bottle.
It's only one bottle. And you're only a block away, right?
I already bought it anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't have to carry it very far. We've established that as well. So that's great. Well, Crystal, do us a favor, because part of what we want to talk about today, too, of course, is y'all are participating in South African Wine Week.
Yes.
Which is October 30th to November 5th.
Really excited about that.
It's going to be a lot of fun. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing with that.
Well, of course, we want to do a flight, because that's what we do so well here at Effervescence. So Graham Beck has been one of my all-time favorites even before I opened Effervescent. It's available in the United States pretty much anywhere. So a lot of people have tried that and love it. And then I wanted to try some other sparkling wines that we aren't able to get, you know, commonly. So we're going to try the Bachelor.
Which is really most of them when it comes to South
Africa. Yes, most of them.
In this
market
now.
Yeah, Graham Beck's probably the only one. And a lot of people know that because the Obamas did use that as their wine after they won the election.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The
Brut. Okay, cool.
Yes. And Oprah Winfrey's a big fan, the owner.
Okay.
Graham Beck is probably the wealthiest person in South Africa. He's big in horse racing in Kentucky, owns a bunch of horses and land, and he's big in the art world. But he makes no money off of Graham Beck. It's not a money-making venture for him. It's to create jobs for South Africa. That's the only reason that he even operates. So it's a great story, too. For their country, and I love their rosé especially, so it will be on our flight.
So the sparkling rosé?
Yes.
Wonderful. And tell us about, because the other two ones you have are also really cool.
The Baxburg is something new. It's actually a kosher sparkling, and it's 100% Chardonnay, non-vintage, and they classify this in South Africa as Method Cap Classique. That's what they call their sparkling wine, MCC. So that's what this is called.
So it's made in the Champagne method.
Method, right.
Which we can't really call it anymore if you're not in Champagne.
But they call it Method Cap Classique, with an E on the end. And it's located, their winery, 45 minutes inland from Cape Town in Paarl, P-A-A-R-L.
Yep.
And the stone there is more granite. It's not a limestone stone.
An ancient granite.
Ancient granite.
Yep.
So that should be super interesting to taste that. And being kosher. There's a whole process they have to go through to make it kosher. And I think that's super interesting.
It has to be flash pasteurized?
Yes. Yes, for other people to handle it and pour it at functions. So there's a whole world that I had never heard anything about. So I think that's super cool to be able to get our hands on that. And then we're going to try the Colmont Brut Reserve. And it's a Chardonnay Pinot blend as well. They use 20% reserve wines. And it's from the Frankshock Valley, if I pronounce that right. Mm-hmm. Not even sure, because I've never been there before. But
sounds all right.
That should be interesting as well. It's a Brut Reserve.
So now you all are doing that. So we talked about so the classic with Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Pinot Meunier, and then the other being a Chardonnay exclusively.
Well, not Pinot Meunier. They don't use the Pinot Meunier. The other two, the Colmont and the Grand Beck, are Pinot and Chardonnay.
Only. Okay, and no Meunier. Okay.
No Meunier.
And then the other one's Chardonnay exclusively.
Yes, 100% Chardonnay.
Got it.
Now
you all are going to feature these both by the glass and in a particular flight.
We're going to do a special South African flight with the three of these, and then you can order them by the glass, full glass or half glass. Same with the flight. You can get a half glass flight, 3 2.5-ounce pours, or a full flight, which is 5 ounces.
And y'all are going to do that the whole week?
Yes, we sure are.
Excellent. Excellent. And, you know, I'm thinking some of these things because you guys do really good this is way off script, but you guys do really good French fries here.
Oh, yeah. All our food's amazing.
Yeah, and those are going to go really good with these.
They will. And we have an aubergine aioli, which is an roasted eggplant aioli with sumac on top.
That's going to go great with any of these South African sparklings that we're talking about. Well, do me a favor, Crystal. We've got about a minute left before we have to close out. Tell people, let's remind them of the address. Tell people where they can find you on social media, and tell people where they can find you online.
Sure. You can find us online at nolabubbles.com. And we also have an Instagram at Effervescence Nola, and Facebook as well, Effervescence Nola. And we're at 1036 North Rampart Street, right on the edge of the French Quarter. We're next to WWL. Matter of fact, we used to be their sound and recording studios.
Ah, yeah, that's right. I knew that part of the story.
Ursuline and North Rampart.
Ursuline and North Rampart. So lots of great stuff, friends. If you haven't been out to North Rampart, yet another great place to come check out here, Effervescence. Get your bubbly on. And they have other stuff. They have good cocktails. They have good food. They have good still wine. Crystal, we'll do this again soon, too. We'll get into, you don't have to be so, we'll focus on other things next time.
Okay, sounds like fun.
So we'll do that again soon. Thanks so much for the hospitality. Thanks for the lovely Polly act. That was really wonderful. I appreciate it. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. Crystal, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with just a little bit more. We're going to close out the show. Come on back.
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Tim McNally, welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land wherever you may be. Thanks for listening, friends. I appreciate it as always. And as you know, we are sitting here at Mobar on North Rampart Street, more or less right across from Armstrong Park, a fine LeBlanc Smith restaurant. And as you also know, we are talking about South Africa Wine Week coming up from October 30th to November 5th. Lots of good stuff going on. We're going to be talking about that, as you know, leading up to the week, during the week, after the week. It's going to be South Africa wine most all the time. All the time, something like that. But we're here. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're here at Mobar, as I said, and we are sitting here with Brad Vecchiola, who is the staff sommelier and man about wine. Brad, hello.
Hello. How are we doing?
Good, man. Good to see you. How are you?
Good.
Good, good.
I'm pumped for this.
Awesome. I know you're a big advocate of South African wine, so chomping at the bit to talk about it. Also, Jillian White, beverage director here.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, get up on that. Don't be shy with that microphone there, White.
Guys, I'm known for being shy. Yeah, sorry.
Didn't we have this exact conversation last time about you not being known for being shy?
Okay, I thought I was a shy.
We haven't done the wine tasting yet, so I'm still a little shy.
That's right. Well, I'm Brad. You've recovered from your shyness the first time you're on the show. You've done well.
Never
and
again.
First time on the show, pleased to be welcomed by Jeff Warden, who is with Purveyor. Wine distributor.
Hello.
Fine wines, I should say.
Of fine wines. You can go with a fairly generic name like that if you get in early enough.
very nice. Well done. And a fine voice for radio, even though he's not a radio guy. Might take my job here after the show, which Jeff would not be hard to do, frankly. So, Jeff is kind enough to join us here and share some lovely South African wines. And so this is kind of what I thought we would do. Mobar is going to be participating. We'll get to this in a little bit in South Africa Wine Week, which is going to be a lot of fun. And we'll talk afterwards about what these guys are going to be up to during the week. But we're throwing it all out there. We're doing a live tasting of some South African wines that Jeff has brought in from Purveyor. Some really nice selections that I think speak to really the story and everything that we're trying to cover here with South Africa Wine Week. So let's jump right in, Jeff. We're just going to throw you out, man. Welcome to the show. Tell us about the first wine.
Thank you very much. We'll take a little tour here, but we'll start with Adi Badenhorst's Secateur Chenin Blanc. And Secateur is just pruning shears, nothing more fancy than that. This is 90% Chenin and mostly estate fruit. And he's in Swartland, which is dead north from Cape Town.
Yep.
So he gets a lot of that coastal influence. And Chenin Blanc is really a signature grape for South Africa.
Yeah, they are the largest producer of Chenin Blanc in the world, actually. And Swartland, if I'm not mistaken, Jeff, is one of the... They've been producing wine, as we were discussing off-air and we've discussed before, since the 16th century in South Africa. But in the modern iteration, which we'll kind of move to today, of production of South African wine, Swartland's kind of one of the original or mainstay regions.
It is. It's not quite as well known as some other regions yet, but one of the reasons that it is as prominent as it is Adi Badenhorst and some of his neighbors got together and led a revolution starting in, I think, 2007-ish. And eventually he declared the revolution over. So it was at least moderately successful.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that speaks a lot to the story that we're talking about with South African wines, that we're now in an era with South African wines where they have found their own identity. They're not trying to be something else. We've talked about that, and we'll get into that on other shows about the history and why that's the case. But Brad or Jillian, why don't you jump in and give us some of your impressions of the wine? Maybe talk a little bit about Chenin Blanc, too, as a favorite varietal.
Definitely. I actually know this specific wine from when I started really seriously working with wine. up in Wellfleet, which I'll be heading to tomorrow. One of my first wine mentors was from South Africa.
Way to drop the vacation, Brad. Well done.
As if I
don't contact me.
going.
One of my first weeks there, we did a South African wine dinner that featured Badenhorst and Sadie as well. And really fell in love with them from the start. But nice. Shannon is definitely one of my favorite grapes, which we know mainly from the Loire Valley, which we started to kind of categorize our list recently by region. So we have kind of Loire Valley inspired. So if we pick up one of these soon, then that will definitely make it for sure.
Yeah. And Jillian, what are your, I think Shannon's such a nice pairing for the food that we have in New Orleans in general and the food that y'all have at Mobar. Do you have some thoughts on that, about what your take is on the varietal as far as Chenin Blanc goes?
I mean, I think it's really great to taste this varietal coming from a different region, just because what we do here predominantly is, you know, it's French focused with a lot of different regions peppered throughout. So it's fun to always see the way that varietals can differ through different areas, and just how, you know, I think South Africa hasn't always had the most popularity, but it's really great to see such a serious take on wine here and done really beautifully the way that they do it with this. And I mean, at an approachable, you know, price point, they're not trying to gouge anybody. So that's good.
I think that's, you know, that's one
quality
of the,
wine.
Absolutely. And I think those are some really good points. And Jeff's going to pour us the next one here. I think that's a great point, Jillian, that you raise, is one of the nice things about South African wines. I think they're, you know, very food friendly to New Orleans and beyond, but the value versus the quality is a region that makes it worth discovering, as you said. Some of the price points that we're looking at here, friends, are, you know, retail less than $20 a bottle. Really, I think you're stretching retail if you're spending $30, $35 a bottle on a South African wine. It's almost top end stuff relative to what's available in the market. So when you come out to a restaurant, your price point's going to be really good. Do you have any thoughts on that, Jeff? I mean, you're the guy with the wines in the portfolio.
There is a great value coming out of South Africa. The rand is forever devalued against the dollar,
right,
and it makes our buying power very strong. It also is fairly inexpensive for the land. So they've just got a sort of a double whammy of presenting values. And South African, as Jillian touched on, wasn't as popular as it's growing now. Got a little bad rap coming out of apartheid. Some very generic cooperative juice hit the market and went all over the country, and people tasted it and didn't like it, and that was it. They never went back again.
Right.
So that's starting to change, and it's been changed for a decade and a half at least. Coming out of South Africa, it's a matter of education and getting people to try things.
I think that's a great point. I think, and some of these eras break down. I think there's been three phases, sort of the post-apartheid phase, the mimicry phase, as our friend Jim Clark there at Wines of South Africa says, where they're trying to be something else. And then we're now in that third phase of self-identity, self-awareness, and making really good stuff. Well, Jeff, let's come right back to you. Tell us a little bit about the Sauvignon Blanc, Neil Ellis.
Okay, we'll move to Neil Ellis's Sincerely Sauvignon Blanc. He makes a handful of them. This is, and he loathes this term, but I'm going to use it because it's accepted everywhere else. This is his entry-level Sauvignon Blanc. Sorry, Neil. And he's
Sauvignon
blending,
Blanc with training wheels.
Yes. He's blending this from some estate fruit, but he also was involved from a winemaking standpoint with that terrible cooperative. It was not his fault, but he got out from KWV and was meeting a lot of growers all over South Africa. So he's been able to develop relationships for the people that are putting quality product and growing good grapes. He's known them for 20 years. So there's a little bit of source fruit here as well, but it's a bracing, fresh, bright, juicy Sauvignon Blanc. And I find South African Sauvignon Blancs are absolutely those things that work beautifully at a table with all the things we're told you can't pair things with.
Right.
Salads, green beans, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, all that stuff that strips wine of fruit. South African Sauvignon Blancs can carry through that brilliantly.
Nice acid structure, right? It's got that a bit of a bright pepper note to it. Not quite as bold as I would say the New Zealand style, if that's what you're looking for, but certainly a little bit bolder than what we would say from the Loire. We got about 45 seconds left before we're going to take a break. Brad, why don't you give us your quick thoughts on this wine before we cut to commercial?
I like it. It's
good thoughts, Brad. I like
it. It's very
that's
racy.
That's all we're looking for.
It's mouthwatering. It's juicy.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it will definitely be a nice addition to the week. For
yeah,
sure.
Absolutely. Nice acid structure, right? It is racy. Something that's going to stand up to some spicier fare. I think certain fish with a little spiciness to it, I think, would go really well with this. Certainly some salad, that kind of thing, as we talked about. Well, you guys, let's do this. Let's take a little bit of a break. We're going to taste some more wines here with Brad, Jillian, and Jeff, all from South Africa, because, hey, that's what we're talking about, South Africa Wine Week. And we're here on the Noel Drinks Show. Stay tuned for South Africa Wine Week, October 30th to November 5th. Check out noeldrinks.com. Also, check out wosa.us/events. We'll be right back.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event, or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
This time I'm walking to New Orleans. I'm walking to New Orleans. I'm going to need to parachute when I get through walking these blues. Back to New Orleans. I've got my suitcase in my hand. Now ain't that a shame? I'm leaving here today. Yes, I'm going back home.
Welcome back to the Noel Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you. We are talking South African wines, and yes, we are here at Mobar, North Rampart Street, and we are chatting with Brad, Jillian, and Jeff. Brad and Jillian, of course, of Mobar, and Jeff with Purveyor of Fine Wines. Let's just jump right in, because we're tasting by the seat of our pants. That's what we do here on the show. Jeff, tell us about this one. It's a Chardonnay from Robertson Valley.
Robertson Valley is indeed where we are now. It's Devetsoff the family is Devet. The place is called Devetsoff. They settled there in the late 1600s, and they are making an unoaked, very clean Chardonnay. You should think about Robertson. It's inland, but still cool. So think about it a little bit like Central Coast in California. Lots of rolling farms. This is not a very developed area. And this Chardonnay is a pretty prototypical example of unoaked Chardonnay. It's got a nice little flesh on it. But it's not heavy, and it's got a good acid frame.
Absolutely. Very nice acid finish on this. And I'm getting an interesting strawberry note on this wine, which I find very pleasant, but very different.
Yeah.
Eddie, go ahead, Brad.
Yeah, I think this wine definitely reminds me of some of the wines coming out of Santa Barbara. It will be really nice moving into fall. I get not strawberry per se, but I get grilled apple. It'll go really nice with fall spices. Also some peach and honey.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Jillian?
Yeah, I think that the acidity in this is really nice to be complementary to the food that we do here. Sometimes, it's good to be contrasting with the richness of a lot of the fattier things that we can do, or, menu items. But also it is it's also nice to drink by itself, though. Doesn't necessarily have to be a food-paired wine, in my opinion. But I got a lot of green apple honey kind of ness to it, and a little bit of tropical fruit. I see what you say about maybe a
like a strawberry like preserve. Actually. Yeah, that seems it's very nice porch sipper, chilled, like we were talking about.
Good for New Orleans wine. Fall. That doesn't exist.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and actually, yeah, it makes me think any sort of shellfish dish is going to go really nicely, I think, with this for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually a pretty easy pairing. So if you're used to the big California-style Chardonnay, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about stainless steel, very clean, nice acid structure on the end. This is a very versatile Chardonnay,
yeah,
I would say.
I would say so, too.
Great. What do we have, next, Jeff?
We're going back to Adi Badenhorst production, and this is his Secateur Rosé. They've changed the blend a little bit for this, which is 2017 vintage. I know that's a little bit of time travel for us, but they're 6 months ahead of us.
That's okay. Yes, that works. Yes. People go, wow, what?
It always freaks me out. I've been in the business for 25 years, and it always surprises me. This is a predominantly Senso blend, and Senso is a blending grape from the south of France, mostly used for color and acid in Côte d'Aronne and Chateauneuf-du-Pape, things like that. So this has that nice Provençal color to it, but really intense, bright acid, some nice fruit, and it's a lovely dry rosé, very versatile.
Yeah. What do you think, Brad?
I love it. I do.
It's nice. I get a nice, there's a bit of a light minty note that I get on it on first sip, and I don't mean to imply not a minty note that you get on certain California wines, so the bright Yerba Buena note, but the just a light touch of menthol minty note on this, almost like a breath mint kind of thing. But Jillian, what about you?
I mean, I could drink this very easily, but I also, it's hard for me to come by a rosé that I don't like.
See, that's why you have to talk, because I'm drinking right now.
Right,
so
yeah.
Please talk.
Someone has to fill the space. No, I think that it has really great characteristics, and I see the Provence pull from it. It's still pretty, like, light body, got some good fruit in it, but it's not leaving you with this, like, I don't know, very, like, sugary or like overly ripe fruit feeling to it.
Absolutely
sippable
not.
On its own or with.
Absolutely not. Actually the fruit's rather restrained now that I have a second sip from it, and I find there's a nice sort of a hard candy note on it, which is pretty typical of Provence rosés, of course. Mm-hmm. But also very nice acid structure, straightforward, easy drinking. Don't have to overthink this one. Just a nice pairing wine also, I think, goes great.
This is going to go great with our new moules frites, which I shouldn't be talking about yet because it's not on the menu, but it will have a harissa broth and a lemon yogurt.
John Bell, the executive chef here, just told me about the new menu, so we can go on the record with that.
Yeah.
I think
we tasted everything yesterday. We can talk.
You guys tasted everything yesterday.
We tried it all. It's awesome.
It's out there. It's already out there.
I missed that.
Jeff, you and I were not invited to that. How did that actually happen?
I don't know.
I call these people my
day
friends.
Day late and a dollar short.
Day late and a dollar short. Story of my life, man. All right. This is, I find a very approachable rosé. Very nice. Again, very friendly price point also. So, you guys, let's do this because we're going to come back with another segment with these guys. Tell me a little bit about what you all are thinking about doing for South Africa Wine Week here coming up. And I know it's a little TBD, but, and Jillian, and it's radio, but Jillian and Brad are pointing at each other.
We don't like to talk.
No, I know, the one time we don't want to talk.
That is so not true.
When there's a microphone in front of me.
All right.
We're looking at doing one white, one red, and one rosé or sparkling by the glass, and then pairing those wines with either items on our menu that we already have, seeing what works, and John will also come up with a few fun things during that week.
Yeah, food-wise, that'll pair.
Yeah.
That'll be exciting.
It's a fun area to explore. Like I said a little bit before, like, I think a lot of people know and expect a lot of our offerings to be more of, like, French-driven.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always nice to kind of dive into a new area and get to explore things that other regions have to offer and tie it together with our cuisine, which also is kind of, I think, a lot of times considered to be more French influenced. But just to see how we can really have fun with things and not be super, super traditional in that sense all the time.
Sure. Great point. Shows off the versatility of the wines, I think, really, really well. Let's do this, Jeff. Can we pour the next one?
Sure.
Excellent.
We've got Neil Ellis. We're back to him. And this is also Western Cape, which incorporates a number of wines of wine origins. They don't use the appellation term over there, but think of it as the same thing. This is a Cabernet-based wine with a little Shiraz and Merlot, sometimes a little Cab Franc. and he does it in stainless steel and then sits it on the lees for a little while to develop a little complexity, but it's not an oaky wine. And he calls it Left Bank, but it's not an homage to the Bordeaux Left Bank, but to the Left Bank of Paris, where poets and philosophers used to live. And I think of this as a hanging around, just talking about stuff, having a glass of wine at a reasonable price.
I'm glad I asked you about before, because I almost made that mistake. Assuming.
I could drink this with some poets and artists.
Yeah,
absolutely. They can afford it.
And now that's
bring
all out there,
Jillian.
Bring
us to the Left Bank of Paris, please.
Yeah, absolutely.
Field trip.
Yeah, also very, very nice, very approachable. You guys, Brad, thoughts on this one, aside from drinking it with poets?
It's delicious. It's juicy, also smoky. Get little hints of beef jerky, tobacco.
Absolutely. Leather, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree on all of those points.
So
sure.
Nice, easy pairing, I think, with obviously this will go just fine with red meat, especially not something that's overly spicy, so like skirt steak, or which I know you guys often
hear. Or hanger steak.
Really nice.
Yeah, hanger steak will pop. Right, exactly. I think would go really, really nicely and show very well that way. And again, also very friendly on the price point here.
God, so I was just noticing that myself.
Yeah. Yes, and so we're just give us a ballpark, Jeff. Retail.
Retail's probably mid-teens on this.
Mid-teens, which and pretty much everything we've tasted so far is going to be right in the mid-teens ballpark, right?
This is retail. South Africa's sweet spot. It's harder and harder and harder to find those kind of things from other places on the globe. I will not go on record with specifics there.
Fair enough. I will not ask you.
But
that.
South Africa way over delivers, and they truly have transformed the quality of wine coming out of that country. It's time to check them out.
Check them out.
And
absolutely.
Of course, they'll have their cult wines where they're very steep because they're not as heavy in production
and not as readily available and all of that. So that's a great point that you make too, Brad. What we see on the market here is not necessarily indicative of the entire production
exactly
of the region, and that's going to be the case really anywhere in the world when we're here in New Orleans. Let's do this, you guys. Let's take another quick break, and we're going to come right back. We're going to chat. We're going to make Jeff stick around because we've got one more wine to taste.
You're
and we're going to talk a little
us.
Bit more about Mobar and South African Wine Week and some other stuff that we got coming up. So we're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. Come on back.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with New Orleans' own Sazerac Company, makers of Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In case you haven't noticed, rye whiskey is hot, flying off store shelves and dominating the bar scene in New Orleans and around the country. Rye's spicy and assertive character is drawing in those looking for whiskey with a bite, but that equally pairs well with cocktails. Enjoy it in cocktails like the Old Fashioned or Manhattan, or simply savor it on the rocks. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose, Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
The French Market is a place where history is made fresh daily. From the historic Upper Pontalba building on Jackson Square to the ever-evolving Farmers Market, our six-block district celebrates New Orleans food, music, and culture through events, festivals, walking tours, health and fitness classes, and also children's workshops at the New Orleans Jazz Park. Visit our calendar of events at www.frenchmarket.org. The French Market, making history fun since 1791.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Savory crabmeat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're going to stay here to exude our soul.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you on WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. Yes, we're talking about Jillian's Iceland vacation, how she landed on her head.
How was it?
Yeah. No, that was prior to the vacation.
Oh, that was
on a separate account.
Did she tell you she dropped her phone during Oktoberfest?
No.
Shocking, yeah. Of course.
But in Germany, you were there, and then you were in Iceland.
I was.
Yes, yeah, so, and then you're trying to make us feel sorry for you because you went to Oktoberfest.
No, I'm trying to be. I'm trying to make sure that I don't curse on your radio station by drinking too much wine because I also have to go to the gym today. God, Brian.
Oh, I feel so bad. Jillian, everyone feels so absolutely terrible for you right now.
What a tough life.
Huh? You didn't know that this actually was a pity party for me?
I had no idea.
Not a South African wine feature? God.
I had
no idea. Let me give you the cry emoji.
I know.
With my fingers. All right. Awesome.
If only Liam were here.
All right, what
really
are we drinking? What is this last wine?
Yeah, if only Liam were here. Yeah. Fair enough. So, Jeff, sorry. Let's talk about the wine here instead of the pity party for Jillian White, who went to Oktoberfest.
You have to throw the last name too. God,
oh yeah, no, your name's out there. Go ahead, Jeff.
Let the stalking begin.
Yeah.
So we're back to Adi Badenhorst and Swartland, north of Cape Town. And this is he makes a couple of tiers of wine. This is his family red blend, 2014. More than half Shiraz. There's some Grenache again, a little of the Senso that we talked about with the rosé. And a little bit of something called Tinta Barroca, which is a Portuguese variety that's a nice sort of plump, juicy style that's planted, scattered around South Africa. Mm-hmm. And this is a nice big mouthful of wine.
Jeff, you were talking about something during the break that I think that's very interesting, is that this, it's hard to put your finger on what this actually means, but the minerality note on this is very nice. There's a flinty mineral, sort of, as I like to say, licking a rock in your driveway. Kind of note, like the driveways that we have here in Southeast Louisiana, that kind of flinty white rock note. And it's I know that's kind of, yeah. Oh, Brad's laughing at me, but I'm going to call that an acceptable tasting note. And
no,
aroma.
it's a great tasting note.
I agree.
Thank
you.
I was just talking about the driveways here in Louisiana.
Yeah, exactly.
Do we even have them?
And I have licked those
rocks. Do you
mean
the potholes?
The potholes. I said Southeast Louisiana, so over by me, my driveways rock. Anyway, we're getting way off topic. So, but the flintiness on this is really wonderful.
It's pronounced, and I think there's been a pretty consistent, we haven't really talked about it or dwelt on it, but there's a consistent minerality across the board from not only today's wines, but South African wines in general. And one of the reasons that happens, and sorry if this is a little geeky, the earth there is 600 plus million years old. Europe is 100 million-ish, unless you're a flat earther, in which case you've already tuned out. But there's so a lot of the rock.
They don't listen to this show.
Rock and sediment and things that are happening in the vineyards have all broken down, and it seems, to my mind at least, to be much more accessible to the vines. And there's just that granitic soil, or the limestone in some cases, is pronounced and across the board available. And it is, minerality is a really hard thing to describe. But for me, it's the umami of wine. It's this sort of tactile feel on the tongue, and it makes things tingle a little bit, and it makes my mouth water, and it makes me want more of it. And that's really, it's just hard to describe, but it's one of the hallmarks of Chablis, is that minerality.
Absolutely. Certain Sauvignon Blancs as well. And I think it's one of these things that you maybe will notice that it'll manifest at the back of the front palate, in your mid palate is where it comes through very nicely. And I think when you start to see some of these wines, we were talking about Lake County, Jeff, in California, where you have the ability for the vines to deep root into the soil. And I think that where you start to find older vines that have that non-overly aggressive fertile soil, but where a deep rooting situation can happen, where you get, you know, 15, 20 foot of root, you start to see these notes
exactly
pronounced
that,
in the
that,
wine.
That lack of fertility makes them dig deeper and go through various layers, and I think adds nothing but complexity in the long run to the wine.
Absolutely. And this is, you know, and bringing it back to this particular wine, I think it's interesting, and Brad and Jillian, your thoughts on this. This, to me, this wine speaks to a little bit of the character of where South Africa is now with wines today. So we're looking at this blend, which is a little bit over half Shiraz, a bit of Grenache, a bit of Sanso, and then that 10%, as Jeff said, of Tinta Barroca. This is a non-traditional blend. They're not trying to do anything other than execute something well in their own space. And I think we see a very unique wine here.
I think although it's non-traditional, it is still a beautiful representation of what you would find in the Southern Rhone. So you're getting...
Okay, there you go.
I mean, sure, it's more Shiraz than you would get in Grenache in the Southern Rhone, but I think you get a lot of those same qualities. Definitely the minerality.
Definitely.
Yep.
But even more so, mm-hmm. that you were explaining.
My mind.
Yep.
And so we have a soft spot for Rhone ourselves, I guess, personally. So this kind of speaks to, while also having its own identity and obviously doing their own thing, it is a nice, I think, comparison to that as well. I think for familiarity's sake,
for some people, a frame of reference.
Exactly.
And what that Tinta Barroca, as you said, brings that fruity, that plump fruitiness to the table. Mm-hmm. It's a port grape, often in Portugal.
Yes.
And so, what that brings to the table is that very plum, red fruit note to this. That's what makes this somewhat unique to me. Everybody's nodding. Yeah. It's radio. Say something. You're not supposed to agree with me. Go, no, absolute bullocks. All right, now, fair enough. That's really cool.
No, Brian, everything you said was wrong.
Yeah,
no?
Thank you.
It's delicious.
It's a very, very nice wine.
It's got a really great structure to it, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, very food-friendly wine here. All these have been very, very, very food-friendly.
I'll jump in with a quick disclaimer,
please, Jeff,
and then I'll turn
it
right back to you. We talked about mid-teens. This is not mid-teens retail. This is mid to high 30s.
This is a little bit of a step up. Yep. But and I like how you said you're going to throw it back to me. I told you at the beginning of the show, you have a voice for radio and you could take my job, which fair enough. But yeah, absolutely. And even still at the price point that this is at, that this is not a $90, $150, $200 bottle of Rhone. This is a very approachable price point wise wine with a great level of sophistication and complexity for, as you said, mid 30s, maybe topping out at 40 retail.
Yeah,
especially as you explore different regions of Rhone, it can definitely carry a weightier price attached to it. So I think, yeah, that's a great point that this is a lot of wine for that price.
A lot of wine for the price.
You might find this on our list pretty soon.
Yeah.
There you go. There's some unsolicited. glad that Jeff could actually do a sales call here on the radio show and play some wines. You know? Works great.
There we go. Chris, are you listening? Yeah, very
much. A bump in commission for Jeff here, just like that. So you guys, real quick, let's circle back. We got about 2 minutes left before we got to close out. Let's reiterate. Tell us, Jillian, where is Mobar for those who don't know? You should know if you don't know.
Oh, God. I'm just kidding. No, we are located at, if this was a year ago, I might not have remembered. No, 942 North Rampart. We are down the street from our lovely neighbors, Bar Tonic, Black Penny, and Effervescence, almost directly across from Armstrong Park.
Yep, and you guys are open when?
We are open 7 days a week. We do dinner service Monday, well, the whole week, but... from 5 to 10 Monday through Thursday, and then Friday and Saturday 5 to midnight, and we also do brunches Saturday and Sunday from 10:30 until 2.
lovely menu, one of the best restaurants in New Orleans, frankly. So if you don't know this, if you're listening from outside the area, you need to come to Mo Bar on your next trip and check it out. And Chef John Bell, executive chef, is standing here behind. Wave, it's radio, John, but there you go.
They can't hear your wave, but we know your wave.
But we know you're there. And he's concerned about a 4:45 reservation. But it's one of the finest restaurants in town. And actually, Jeff, do me a favor. Tell people where they can find a little bit more about Purveyor if they're interested in your portfolio and that sort of thing.
Well, we are online, but we're getting ready to revamp the website. So just reach out to, you can call us at 504-523-2300.
Nice. Fingers crossed.
You can call me. My cell is 504-259-5663, and we'll get you the information you need.
And a fine list that you guys have.
Thank you.
Well done. Jeff, thank you for sharing the wines. I really appreciate it.
Thanks very much. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. Jillian, Brad, thank you so much for hosting today.
Thank you.
And always a pleasure.
Thank you very much. And hey, we're going to do, we're going to have a whole lot of fun going on here at Mo Bar for South Africa Wine Week coming up October 30th to November 5th. Check it out. More news on specifically what's going on. I think that's why John's over there pacing Chef John Bell, because he's listening to what wines you guys are going to bring in, and then he's already plotting what the menu is going to look like with the recommended pairings. But it's just going to be easy breezy. Come in and get some by the glass stuff and come in and check out some great wines at a great price. Going to be a lot of fun. Thanks for hosting, you guys. I appreciate it. Good to see y'all.
Thanks, Brian.
Hey, we're going to take a little break. We're going to be back with the NOLA Drink Show. More to come. Come on back. I'm sitting here, la la, waiting for my ya-ya. It may sound funny, but I don't believe she's coming out.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bageau heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Welcome back to the show. I hope you enjoyed those interviews. I hope you turn up for South Africa Wine Week coming up not too long from now, October 30th to November 5th. If you're interested in more of the events that are going on and more being added, lots of great people participating, Brennan's, Trejo, Mobar Effervescence, as you know, whom we just talked to, Bacchanal, a whole bunch of places. Okay, there's a bunch going on. You can check out wosa.us/events. That's WOSA.us/events. Check out the
growing list. A lot of stuff, you know, BTG, by the glass stuff happening all week. And again, some one-off events, different tastings at wine shops, these sorts of things. So, hey, go check that out. WOSA.us/events. A couple updates, friends, just even in the past few minutes. Yes, Calistoga is under a mandatory evacuation. The San Francisco Half Marathon has been canceled due to concerns with, I think that was due to happen over the weekend, concerns with air quality and also a bit, you know, this is to be expected. The list of wineries damaged or destroyed is certainly likely to grow. The death toll is certainly going to go up and the number of structures and lives affected will radically go up, I'm sure. So again, help out our friends, Sonoma County Resilience Fund, Napa Valley Community Foundation, Community Foundation of Mendocino County. One event to mention coming up, friends, this weekend, taking place, Pontchartrain Vineyards Jazz in the Vines, featuring the legendary blues man here from New Orleans, Walter Wolfman Washington, and his band, The Roadmasters. That's this Saturday, 6:30 to 9 at Pontchartrain Vineyards. You can get two adult admissions and a bottle of wine. It's a choice of their Rue St. Louis and off-dry white wine, or the Voodoo Zinfandel, Red Zin there, of course, for $25. So you can choose one of those two bottles and get two tickets to the concert for $25. That's this Saturday evening, 6:30 to 9. Weather looks like it's going to be pretty good, at least thus far. And that's a great event. Outdoor concert right there between the vineyard and the winery building. A lot of fun. They got food trucks out there, all that good stuff. So go check that out. Go visit PontchartrainVineyards.com for more. Online ticket sales, I should note, end at 3 o'clock the day of the show. So, and that offer that I just mentioned, two tickets and a choice of one of those two bottles for $25. You can only get that till 3 p.m. online the day of the show. That is not available at the gate. If you just want to get tickets at the gate, $10 a person. Children 17 and under are free. Bring some chairs, bring a blanket. You can bring non-outside alcoholic drinks, and you can bring your own food. But again, there's food trucks out there, so take your pick and enjoy the show. 6:30 to 9 p.m. Going to be some great blues music. Walter Wolfman Washington and the Roadmasters at Pontchartrain Vineyards. Something else, friends, that we've talked about quite a bit, and really not a whole lot new to say here. Excuse me. With Tales of the Cocktail. The media continues to talk about this. I guess we're part of the media. We're more of a talk show, but continues to talk about this. And so a big article in The Advocate that just came out that Ian McNulty wrote talking about the shakeup of Tales of the Cocktail. Friends, of course, you probably know Tales of the Cocktail is the largest cocktail bartender spirits industry event on the planet, and it's based in New Orleans. There was a huge shakeup. We've talked about this quite a bit. Ann and Paul Tenorman, who own the event, basically, and it's there's a nonprofit wing, we've talked quite about this, that puts the event on, and then they contract to a company that they own, a private company called Mojo 911 LLC, and they're the ones who are contracted to put on all of these huge events that cost tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars to put on. The amount of money that Tales of the Cocktail brings in is astronomical, and they make a lot of money from it. Okay, so now what's gone on, and we're not going to talk about the incident really, other than the fact that Ann and Paul, I think we all know this, there was a racially charged statement made, a poor statement, a racist statement made during Mardi Gras this past year, and it basically propagated all throughout social media. You can go look that stuff up if you want to see what went on. And the fallout has been severe, and rightfully so. And a lot of questions being asked about Tales of the Cocktail. One thing that I'll say is we did reach out to Tales of the Cocktail here. They have a new president, Melissa Young, who has taken over running the private part, the Mojo 911 LLC. And she wrote an open letter that we actually talked about before that came out talking about, you know, mistakes were made and things need to change. With the event, which I think is true, and we invited, where I'm going with this is we reached out to their media department and invited Melissa to come on the show to talk about it, and they don't seem to be talking to the media at all. So in the article in The Advocate, there's no direct stuff mentioned from anyone at Tales of the Cocktail. It was just essentially quoting the open letter and then talking to many people in the cocktail community. It is an important event to New Orleans, and that it's, you know, and I should mention this too, that it's supposedly still going to happen this next year, July 17th to the 22nd, and it's in New Orleans. Now, a lot of the concern, though, is that people might be stepping back. I think we saw this last year, that people step back from the event, and we've seen some sponsors, I think, become very nervous about the situation. Certainly, a lot of folks that work in the bartending and spirits industry, and many people of color that work in the industry, and many people with different sexual orientations and these things that I think have been problematic for Tales of the Cocktail to address have taken a step back and probably will further take a step back. Part of what happened then is Paul Tenorman resigned from the board not too long after this all happened during Mardi Gras, and then some 7 months later, just very recently, Ann Tunderman announced that Paul was coming back to be a part of the organization. This is not, you know, I think it was kind of window dressing when Paul resigned from the board, but having him come back anyway in any capacity after saying that this was done to, you know, fix things or make things right, irritated a lot of people. I'll use a mild word. And they had set up a diversity council, a lot of people from the diversity, to address these issues, being more inclusive to people of color. Here in New Orleans, so much of the service industry, in all facets of the service industry, are people of color. We know it's a large black population in the New Orleans area. Tales of the Cocktail has not done a whole lot to, I think, address a lot of these things. Now, bringing Paul back, I think, was a slap in the face to the situation, maybe showed that the Tundermans really didn't understand what was going on. And my friend Ashton Berry, who is a beverage director. She's actually in New York, I think, working temporarily, but was working at the Ace Hotel, a wine expert, these sorts of things, and a woman of color herself, said, look, you can't just take people of color, minorities, for granted, because what's going to happen is if you continue to do that and think that people are going to take it, I'm paraphrasing her, but people that are going to take it, they're going to push back with their dollars. And I think that's what we're sort of seeing going on. Now, one of the concerns here, potentially, Tales of the Cocktail provides a huge economic shot in the arm in the slow months of summer to the city of New Orleans. That's an important thing. I think there's a catch 22 situation here, that if the event goes away, it doesn't bring in as many people, sponsorships, all of these things, that hurts our local economy. A lot of people in the service and hospitality industry are people of color that we're talking about. Everybody in the service industry is going to pay a price. But I think we need to look at, you know, some of the racist components that went on here and what the real effect of that is, what kind of message that sends, probably more importantly. But this is not a good situation. I think a lot of the concern is if Tales of the Cocktail, somebody comes in and maybe seeks to buy it, they might move it to that. To this point, it's still happening next year. It might be a diminished event. Other people might pop up to try and create more competition in the Tales of the Cocktail. Might be a good thing, but not necessarily a good thing for the pocketbook of New Orleans. Here's where I'm going with this, friends, because I think I want to make sure that we talk about some of the inclusion that we need to talk about. The cocktail industry, the spirits industry, it's an industry that's very diverse, that brings in lots of people to work, people of color, people of different sexual orientation, all of this sort of stuff. And Tales of the Cocktail, unfortunately, has not been very good at social issues. You hear me say this all the time. I think Tales of the Cocktail should actually focus on being a trade and professional event, a professional development event that focuses more on the industry itself, making cocktails, what these products are, some of these things. Don't try and be everything to everyone. There are people who deal, for example, with sexual assault in the bar industry and spirits industry better than they do. There are people that deal with racial issues and inclusion better than they do. So if you want to do that stuff as Tales of the Cocktail, you need to bring in people that are truly experts and give them the keys of the car to actually be able to do this, and give them some power to actually implement programs, roll them out of Tales, talk about them at Tales, put on seminars, and let them do it. And I know they kind of tried that. Now, Melissa Young is saying that things are going to change, but you need to let people who do this stuff do it well and let them do it. Tales of the Cocktail, I still think, tries to be too much to too many people and tries to sort of own a lot of this industry. And I just don't think that that's particularly right. I think they should do what they do well. I think they need to continue to ask themselves questions about inclusion. They need to address these things. I'm not saying just pretend it's not happening and go back to making cocktails and who's coming out with a new whiskey. That's not what I'm saying at all. But what I'm saying is that don't try and address all of these issues and be sort of this massive behemoth that is everything to the cocktail industry. Nobody's going to be able to do that well. I think the Tundermans maybe have finally realized that they have created something that's bigger than them. They say they're going to divest by the end of the year from the private LLC, Mojo 911. We'll see if that happens. I think it probably will. And then we'll go from there. But changes are coming to Tales of the Cocktail. I hope it doesn't hurt New Orleans, but they have to become more inclusive. They have to understand these issues. They have to let people who do them well deal with them. And they have to understand the reality in which they are operating moving forward. I hope they do. It's a good event for the city overall. Friends, thanks for tuning in here to the NOLA Drink Show. I really appreciate it. We're going to be back with another show next week, and we'll talk to you about it then, because I don't know what's going on. I never do. We always kind of figure it out as we go. We are going to talk to the guy who is behind the upcoming Mac and Cheese Festival. I know that much. Friends, have a great weekend. Be good to each other. Help out the friends of our fire out there in California with all that going on. And until then, cheers, y'all.